trusted Tarawa instead of properly, Lawrence realized with some annoyance. Wondering what kind of catastrophe would prompt Tarawa to call on the Saturday before Christmas, Lawrence touched the keypad. Pete Connors' dark face appeared on the tiny screen, split from ear to ear by a toothy grin. "Sorry to disturb you, but I thought you'd want to see this right away." It took several moments for Lawrence to understand what he was looking at. Once he grasped that it was a village built by Martians, he leaped to his feet and gave a war whoop that startled his family so badly they nearly knocked the Christmas tree over. Dr. Li Chengdu watched his neighbors preparing for Christmas with the cool, detached eye of an alien observer. They struggled to string colored lights over their houses, put up elaborate decorations on their lawns, and drove themselves deeper into debt by buying elaborate gifts and throwing too many parties. Now and then they talked about the religious significance of the holiday, but as far as Lee could determine, the true purpose of the occasion was to boost retail sales. No matter, he enjoyed the fuss and merriment, even though much of it was underlaid with a kind of desperate determination to do everything right and be happy no matter what the family tensions. When Connors called from Tarawa, the black former astronaut seemed more excited than the neighborhood children. "Jamie did it," Connors blurted. "It's really a village, built by Martians." Lee half collapsed into his favorite chair, the comfortable, yielding recliner that had been his one luxury on the first Mars expedition, and stared open-mouthed at the phone screen's display of the Martian building. His heart thudded beneath his ribs. Intelligent creatures lived on Mars. We are not alone in the universe. Not only life, but intelligent life exists elsewhere. His gaze wandered to his living room window and the twinkling lights on his neighbor's house and lawn across the suburban street. What will they feel when the news reaches them? Frightened? Excited? Eager to meet their peers? Or afraid of meeting their superiors? Darrell C. Trumbull was at home on Saturday evening, struggling with the decision of whether to go downtown to his club for dinner or tell his wife to have the cook fix something for the two of them. Connors' phone call ended all thoughts of dinner. Trumbull gaped at the views from Mars, then immediately snapped, "Get off this line! I've got 6 dozen people to call right away!" Connors said, "The news media, never mind the stupid media. Let Lawrence and his flunkies take care of that. I'm calling money people, man. They'll be begging to back the next expedition now." "Is this a crank call?" asked the news director. "Young lady," said Walter Lawrence, "I am the executive director of the International Consortium of Universities. My people are phoning all the major networks and print outlets. I chose to call your network personally because your CEO is a close friend of mine." "Then why didn't you call him?" the news director wondered. She was a bone-thin, sharp-featured woman of 37 who had seen her share of hoaxes and scams. "Intelligent Martians my ass," she thought. "Look, what you showed me looks like an Adobe housing project. You claim it's on Mars?" It took Lawrence fully 15 minutes and all the patience he could engender to convince her that he was telling the truth. Still, she did not fully believe him until the monitors above her desk, which showed what the other networks were running, all suddenly started showing footage of the Martian cliff dwelling. Even the Saturday night football game was preempted. That's what finally convinced her. The President of the United States was startled when his science advisor phoned to tell him the Mars explorers had found intelligent Martians. "Have you notified DOD?" the president asked immediately. The science advisor shook her head. She had not had access to the president for weeks, and she was surprised at how much older he looked on her office wall screen without his makeup. Her office was crowded with grinning, partying young men and women. Champagne corks were popping. People were toasting the Mars explorers. Martian jokes were buzzing through the group. "How many Martians does it take to replace a light bulb? Why do Martians have headaches?" "Mr. President, the Martians no longer exist. Their village is empty. They pose no threat to us." The president blinked his baggy eyes. "Well, this one village may be abandoned, but there might be others, mightn't there?" The science advisor nodded thoughtfully. He's got a point there. If Waterman and his people have found one village, there must be others elsewhere on the planet. The Zeman family sat hunched together on the sofa in their Kansas City living room, staring at the wall screen. It was showing the same view of the Martian dwelling for the 12th time. The 5-year-old girl said, "How many times are they going to show that same picture?" "That's on Mars, stoop face," her older brother snapped. "Be quiet," Mrs. Zeman hushed. Again the screen showed a long, slow, panning shot of the wall as the announcer's voice intoned, "Built by intelligent creatures who lived on the planet Mars, our next-door neighbor in space. It's night on Mars now, but with tomorrow's dawn, scientists James F. Waterman and C. Dexter Trumbull will return to this Martian village to begin the scientific exploration of the first discovery of intelligent life beyond our own world." It was nearly midnight in Rome. Father DiNardo had struggled through the swarming, beeping, lurching, pre-holiday traffic to reach the Vatican, summoned by no less than Cardinal Brian, reputed to be closer to the Pope than anyone else on Earth. Now he sat in a small office, its walls covered with Renaissance frescoes of saints and martyrs, while Cardinal Brian paced restlessly back and forth. "So what does this mean, Father?" the Cardinal asked. "What should I tell His Holiness?" Brian was an American, in line perhaps to be the first American pope. His Irish ancestry was easy to see in his heavy-jawed, fleshy face. "It means, apparently," DiNardo answered slowly, "that God was pleased to create intelligent creatures on more worlds than just our own." "Intelligent, you say?" "They must have been, to build such a village for themselves." "Intelligent." Cardinal Brian seemed to muse on the word as he paced.
"Intelligent," Father DiNardo repeated firmly.
The Cardinal turned toward him. "Intelligent, yes. But did they have souls?" Morning, Sol 102. Grandfather Al was waiting for him when he returned to the village, smiling from beneath his droop-brimmed hat, the black one with the silver band that he liked to wear when he went out to the pueblos.
"I told you it was here, didn't I?" Al said.
He was bundled up in a fleece-lined leather jacket, hands dug deep into the pockets of his jeans. It was cold on Mars. Jamie, still in his hard suit, shook his head inside the helmet. "As a matter of fact, Al, I don't remember you saying anything about it."
"Aw, I must have," Al said. "Hell, I've been leading you here ever since you were a kid."
"I know, Grandfather," said Jamie. His hard suit had disappeared. Like Al, he was in jeans and windbreaker, and a sky-blue baseball cap. "I'm grateful."
Al laughed delightedly. "Come on, Jamie. Let me show you around the old place."
From somewhere behind him, Jamie could hear water running freely. Jamie woke up with a start. He sat up, saw that Dex's bunk was empty, heard the water recycler running in the lavatory. The dream dwindled away. Jamie felt disappointed that it had ended too soon, that Al would never be able to show him the village, that they would not be able to discover its secrets together. Dex came out of the lab looking bright and shining.
"Hey, you know it's going to be Christmas in just 2 days."
Jamie grunted as he swung his feet onto the floor.
"That's right. I hadn't thought about it." "You've given the world a hell of a Christmas present, Jamie boy."
He looked at the younger man.
"Not me. Us. We. You and the rest of the team back at the dome."
Dex grinned at him.
"You, pal. You drove us here. We wouldn't be here if you hadn't pushed it."
Standing, wiggling his bare toes on the cold plastic flooring, Jamie said, "Well, we're here now. Let's get to work."
"Right."
They grabbed a pair of snack bars and drank some juice in lieu of a real breakfast, anxious to get out and down to the village. While Dex started putting on his hard suit, Jamie checked their overnight messages. The list scrolled for what seemed like half an hour. "Everybody and his uncle has something to say to us," he called back to Dex. Trumbull came clumping up to the cockpit in his hard suit, boots, and leggings. "Anything from dear old Dad?"